Welcome to We Are Libertarians for this week. I am your brave and valiant, courageous and good-looking host, Chris Spangle. Across the table from me is Gregory Linz. Greg, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Chris. How are you?
Working on any memes of me at the moment?
I am not working on any memes whatsoever. I am just scrambling to be fully prepared so we can deliver a fully informed show to our wonderful listeners.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Joining us is our friend, our racism insurance, our stereotype-busting buddy, Harry Price. How are you doing, Harry?
I'm going good, going good. And after that one episode with all those brutalists, your rates are going to have to go up.
Oh, that is true, yes.
But now, you have a Terry Labonte hat on.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, that's a Terry Labonte hat. That's, you were eating a panini last night. It's not normal black guy stuff.
It's Terry Labonte. He's the best race car driver of all time. Of all time.
That's a little much.
Yeah.
Sebastian Loeb, pretty good, but he's no Terry Labonte.
He's the best Labonte.
Michael, yes. Michael Schumacher. Yeah.
Justin Labonte, he's not even that, you know, not even the same league.
Jeff Gordon.
Literally, not even the same league.
Ari Leyendyke.
Yeah.
Helio.
It's Elio. Yeah. Let's
AJ
not
Hoosier Foyt.
It up
are we
too
in
much.
America? Don't make me trump you.
That voice that you hear are the smooth, dulcet tones of Henry County legend, Jeremiah Morrell. How are you doing, Jeremiah?
Doing quite well, Christopher.
Did I say Morrell or is it Morrell?
Well, we're going to go with Morrell. High moral character.
All right. I have a bone to pick with each and every one of you.
Oh, God.
So let's begin with the airing of grievances. Who wants to go first?
I would like to hear grievances against me. Do I need to get the aluminum pole from my truck, or can we go without that today?
No. Festivus comes early this year. Jeremiah, you ordered pizza, and thank you for that, because certainly I'm not going to buy you any pizza. But you got Canadian bacon on it, and I find that insulting.
I thought that's what I was supposed to do. When in Canada, you get Canadian bacon.
You son of a bitch. See, have we talked about it on air? Have we talked about the Giacomo's incident?
No, I don't believe we have. Or have we? Maybe
I think
when
we
you
might
on
have alluded to it, but yeah. I don't know if we really. Well, maybe we did talk about it a little bit.
So Jeremiah shows up in my house like a jihadist without concern for what I might be doing, because Dear Leader apparently is not allowed to sit around in his free time in his underpants and watch Hitler documentaries.
I know.
And so he showed up and forced me to be social with him, and then made me go to Giacomo's, where he bought me pizza, and it was quite insulting. And before he got there, and on the way there, and while we were there, three times I mentioned, I have $7, so you're going to have to buy, because tomorrow's payday, and I have $7, because I'm on a budget, yo. And that's how the kids talk. Right, Harry? And so he goes, oh, okay. Bill comes, I hand him my $7, and he's offended, because he thought I was kidding.
I mean, I know you have a checkbook. You could have simply written a check, and I would have held it for 2 or 3 days, and leave me to float, and it would have been fine. But now, as we're counting, I think I'm up 2 pizzas to 0.
So that's right.
It's going to be a good time at Giacomo's or Giordano's or something here pretty
Giordano's.
Soon.
Giordano's. That's a good call.
I have a suggestion for you, my friend. Hold your breath until that happens, and then I don't have to buy you any pizzas. Now on to Greg. Let's get to you, Greg.
What have I done? I've done nothing but be supportive.
Oh, you're the worst. You are the worst. So before he gets here, it's a little awkward socially with just Jeremiah, two bros hanging out in the house, just doing nothing. So I turn on the TV. I decide to educate Jeremiah, so I turn on a Hitler documentary.
Yeah, things weren't uncomfortable before the Hitler documentary.
I turned on the Hitler documentary on Netflix, and we're watching it. I didn't see one inspirational quote from Dear Hitler. We did see a flash by. It said, our leader, Dear Leader, Adolf Hitler. Most supreme ruler of Germany, and we both laughed. But so all these quotes that you've been posting on my wall of inspirational Hitler quotes, I don't think they're real.
I think that you're viewing this through only an American framework, and I think that you need to expose yourself to alternative viewpoints.
Oh, I've exposed myself to plenty alternative viewpoints lately.
You might need the European Netflix. Yeah.
Like, for instance, you know, Gandhi, Joel Osteen, Jesus Christ. They're all these wonderful quotes that everyone claims them have all been misattributed from Adolf Hitler. Oh. And last night we went to a
you gotta live your life. I always like to begin with a joke.
Oh, good old Joel. I love Joel. However, we went to a Liberty meetup put on by your least favorite guest host ever, Brett Bittner.
Oh, God, that guy sucks.
At Blackacre Brewery here in Indianapolis. And someone came up to you, a mutual friend of ours came up to you and said, you know, I really love, you know, how you've just changed what you're posting to Facebook. You know, it's really uplifting,
right.
And, you know. And then I think he said, and I like what you've done too, to my, you know, to my inspiration.
Right.
And I think that we're just reaching different target markets, Chris. So right. I don't think you have any reason to be upset. You get the people that are easily converted and need to be inspired.
Right.
I touch the depths of humanity.
Right.
And
the brutalists.
Bring them up with Hitler.
The trolls.
Yes. And I do it in an artistic way. And it's all about rightfully, you know, citing the correct original source. And I'm just tired of all the attributions to Joel Osteen.
You're correcting history. So there's this Tinder girl that I was talking to, and that's not going to happen.
We're
so
getting into your dating stories now.
Sure, why not?
All right.
Let the ladies out there in Wall Land know that Dear Leader is single and aggressively looking, and she wants me to be a Beachbody coach. And so I handed my phone over to Greg. I said, here, deal with this. Respond to this in the most Greg Lens brutalist way you possibly can. And he did. And I'm like sitting there and I'm like 20 minutes go by because he can't figure out how to type on this thing. He turns into like James Neese at a social event. I mean, that level of awkwardness. He's like typing, but he had my phone for like 15, 20 minutes, and I just knew something was going on. Something was afoot, because he typed one sentence, and I'm watching on the iPad to see what he's saying to the girl. He doesn't know he's being monitored, but Dear Leader has monitoring all over the place.
He listens.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Eyes and ears everywhere.
And then I look at my Facebook, and it says, nothing like a hot summer day to bring out the sweaty Latin men to the Sundance pool. Guess my birthday present came early. Hashtag man candy. Which many people have liked. This thread has thoroughly wrestled me.
You were having a great day, and then this thread devolved into absolute chaos. This is why people need government, and anarchy is not the solution right. to anything.
We need a wall to keep those sweaty Latin men
yes.
down where they belong.
No one will be more upset than Trump getting elected than Chris Spangle. Because all those, you know, Puerto Ricans and parallelers, they're going to be booted.
So Mickey Ruiz writes, and I bet you can smell the cologne a mile away. And I write, Joe wears a lot of cologne. Mickey writes, he's not a real Latino. Boom. Mickey Ruiz wrestling husband Joe like a good wife.
Uh-huh.
So that was fun. But yeah, a lot of wrestling has happened. And I just saw the picture of Nick Taylor and Bernie Sanders. That's very good.
He's feeling the burn in
so,
the bedroom.
So yes. Now, Harry. On to you. Not only did you insult me by being 40 minutes late to the podcast today, you didn't answer the door when the pizza arrived.
First of all, that was very hard work. It took a lot out of me to show up late today. You know, I was like, okay, I need to leave at 1 o'clock. That's, you know, I try to like basically harness my sister, what she would do. You know, that's something that she would do. She would
right.
leave. At the time of the event.
That's something that I
right.
do. Yes, that's something I do. So be careful what you say right now.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
We were all supposed to gather here at 1.
Uh-huh.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Here, when we start a podcast, there is one rule. Do not be early.
Mm-hmm. I arrived at 12:59.
But do not be late. You have a 60-second window to arrive if you'd like to be on this podcast.
Hmm.
Demanding, I know.
Yeah, that's.
I like to hold people to standards that I cannot adhere to.
I held him to a pretty high standard. I rang his doorbell every 15 seconds until he put his pants on
Did
and
you
got
really?
Here. Absolutely.
That is
absolutely.
Absolutely beautiful.
He was out there for like 7 minutes before I answered. I heard it. I was just putting my shoes on.
He had things to finish up, I understand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. A lot of moaning and Canadian Mountie stuff going on in here. I don't know.
As As we discussed on the last podcast, I am nude up until the very point that we are upon the agreed upon arrival moment. I had, let's see, at 12:59, I had my shirt on and socks on and my underpants on. But I had not yet found my shorts. So I found my shorts, I put those on, and I heard the doorbell being rung. But I thought, you know what? I don't have my shoes on yet, so I can't answer the door. So
because you need shoes on in your own home.
Listen, I need to be fully prepared. You might be a robber, and I might need to run away. So
from a second floor apartment.
Right. I learned last week that just confronting your enemies in the nude
with a washcloth only,
a washcloth over your balls is not necessarily going to work. So I need to be prepared for any event.
Not every robber is James Neese, though.
Yeah.
I would say he is the anomaly to that scenario, that he sees you, enters the house forcibly, and you're in nothing but a washcloth, and he just goes and sits down on the love seat.
Did you just get a, hey, bro, how you doing?
Yeah. Oh, gee. He goes, oh, fuck, dog. Like, bro, how do you not have pants on? Yeah, so Harry, we ordered pizza because I was hungry, and I said, Jeremiah, let's continue the tradition of you buying me pizza.
It was, hey, I'm hungry. I'm going to go over here in the corner and make myself macaroni and cheese and not offer it to any of my other guests.
Well, I eat a whole box of macaroni and cheese, okay?
That sounds
right. I'm off the wagon, like, this week, and I'm off the wagon. I'm
Is
like,
that, I saw Kraft pasteurized?
I'm like, oh,
it,
yeah.
It was with almond milk.
But I was going to make it with almond milk because I don't have cow milk.
You better go get it.
Don't you have a Latin milk boy that delivers things?
No. Good times. No, I don't really drink much dairy. I have some cheese and I have some butter, but other than that, I avoid dairy for the most part.
You have been off the wagon. Last night I noticed you were drinking something called a ginger beer last
night. Oh, yeah. Ginger beer.
Did you see how his muscles expanded when he drank it?
Mm-hmm. I'm like the Hulk.
Are you implying that you're ginger and accepting it right now?
Shut up. All right.
He drinks the beer of his own people for their strength.
It's made from gingers.
So I want to, first up, let's say we've had some donors lately. And I opened up the PayPal the other day to shock and dismay. There was money in the PayPal account, generous donations from many people. So I want to run down the roster. We've got Sam Naimi. I'm sorry that I messed that up. Dennis Byington. Why can't you people have normal names, okay? Thanks
Dear
for
Dear leader will rename you. You will all have Canuck names next week.
Yeah, Kirk French, our good buddy Kirk French. Austin French Broderson. Austin Broderson is my favorite listener of the year. Nathan Olmsted.
Wow.
Natalie Pictures. I don't know who that sounds like.
Paige.
Yeah. Janaea Jones and Aria Torres. And Christy Oler. Oh, not
Aria
Oler.
Torres.
Aria Torres.
So she'll donate to We Are Libertarians, but she will not have her country pay their debts. That is that's impressive. We appreciate it that you have prioritized We Are Libertarians over Puerto Rico's public debt, Aria.
That's right.
So thank you very much.
So thank you to all of you folks for contributing to We Are Libertarians and helping us grow and expand like my waistline. I'm feeling fat today, okay? Leave me alone.
having a fat day.
I'm having a fat day. I woke up and I looked in the mirror and I said, I feel fat.
I'm down to 205. I'm doing
Look
good.
Look at you. You're very slim.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are you eating? Greg, don't say a word. Harry?
Well, I went down to like just eating turkey, vegetables, Greek yogurt, you know, granola.
Fruit.
Yeah, fruit, you know. Now I got my Subaru, you know, I had to go switch it, get more granola in my life.
Wait a minute. You have a Subaru too?
Yeah.
I don't. This has become another Canadian thing. By the way, the Canadian joke thing, not as funny as it used to be. Sam Goldstein.
He never listens
Troy
to
Troy Hill.
You.
Rob Nunya.
Right. Jeremiah Morrill.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, you execute it funny. It's okay if it's funny. It's just like...
I wore a red shirt today just for you.
You son of a bitch. But the Subaru thing is starting to take off. My good buddy Lex, she's got the picture of me with my Subaru up on her cover photo, which is a whole different level of creepy, by the way. Mm-hmm. So explain the Subaru joke for the people out there who Why did you decide, Greg, to make the Subaru the official car of Chris Spangle?
I didn't decide to. There was a fake Australian Subaru ad that was targeted towards lesbians, and that Subaru was the official, you know,
it's the car for the Outback.
It's the car for the rugged woman. Yeah, for the rugged woman who rejects traditional gender roles and likes an active lifestyle. And, you know, I joked because Chris has been on this until, I guess, this week. he's been on this very, very, very clean-eating, holistic vibes, you know, Crystal's outdoorsy, you know, wants to do all these active lifestyle changes. And,
trying to live past 38.
Yeah, and, you know, I just found it all very, very interesting and very, you know, new and engaging. And so I decided, you know what? He really needs to be on that lesbian Australian Forester ad.
Because taking care of yourself makes you a lesbian.
No, there is one way of doing it, and the other way of wearing a goose down vest, Marty McFly vest, and having a kayak on top of your Subaru just at all times.
Just because I bought a Columbia fleece yesterday, it does not make me a broad ripple.
Yeah, and you're a crunchy granola liberal.
I don't know why you need the three kayaks, Chris. I just don't understand your excess.
Well, he likes to go with his other girlfriends down to Asheville, North Carolina.
We have wine night.
Yeah, they make candles like
wine
Jesse Riddle.
Is life.
The next step for him is he's going to
Who
start
wants
making
to go
goat
to wine
cheese.
And canvas.
Yeah,
goat cheese is next.
Me and my girlfriends like to get together. We like to go through our Tinder selections and laugh at the other guys while we're drinking a bottle of wine, and then we like to watch a little Lifetime.
You mean box?
It's a box of wine.
A box of wine? No, we're classy bitches, okay? this is classy wine, okay? Easily Winery. I've never drank wine.
Then they roast their granola over an open pit in the morning and then go milk the cows for the full rustic experience. But no, I don't know how that, because I didn't even put that much time into that. And I took off.
I think the Subaru thing was just a thread that went on its own.
It did, and I was shocked to see that it made it, because I found it funny personally, because I was familiar with the advertisement. But then the other people were like, oh, Spangle drives a Subaru. He goes kayaking on the weekend. You know, how are his Birkenstocks? What are you
Nothing.
Cringing about?
New Tinder match.
Somebody from the past?
No. I'm trying to bury my past as quickly as possible.
That's why the shovel's in the back of the Subaru.
Yeah. It
helps if you move constantly and change your name.
So I'm constantly changing IPs, Harry. So I work for the Bob and Tom show. And Bob is known as like the free-loving character, and Tom is known as the uptight character who constantly steps in it. And Tom, everywhere we go, anybody who's associated with the show, we get, is Tom really like that? Tom can't be that big of a jerk. Everywhere I go now, I hear, what is wrong with your friend Greg? He is always making photoshops of you. He is just always rustling you, or whatever, you know, white people term they use. And I just say, I don't know. I think he is in love with me. I can't help it.
Took him to Asheville, North Carolina for one weekend, and the next thing you know, he won't quit photoshopping me on things.
No, it is funny. It's like everywhere I go. What? Like three people today.
You've only been up since 12:20.
I know, and everybody's like, "What is up with that Greg guy? He's always making funny pictures of you."
I didn't even make one today, did I?
No, but you updated my status.
Oh, well, that was just funny.
You gave him your phone. You kind of asked for it.
Yeah. I should have known better.
And I didn't even ask for his phone. He presented it to me.
Here, take this. You know what to do.
Yeah.
Right.
You made sure to like a Nickelback fan page, too, while you had it, right?
Can I see that phone again? No, I find that funny because, you know why.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
And so, I'm not a mean person. Jeremiah, am I a mean person?
Greg, I've known you for about a month. And
yeah.
I've never been on Chris's podcast, but I've been on yours twice now, so I don't find you mean at all.
I find you delightful. I find Harry wonderful and refreshing, mm-hmm. defying all stereotypes consistently, and I think it's really, wonderful.
Harry and I have been friends for 20 hours, and it's been great.
It's inspirational to meet one of you. That's basically what you just said. You're just so clean and articulate, yeah. Harry.
I Bidened him.
Yeah, you just Bidened Harry.
Stand up, Harry.
Well, I apologize if you are offended or outraged by my artwork of Chris, then I actually don't apologize whatsoever. You should just keep your thoughts to yourself. No one else cares. And by no means should you ever be outraged on the behalf of others. Because then I will just turn it up to 100.
The way that you can show your disdain for Greg is to make a contribution to We Are Libertarians, and in the memo line just say, for Chris.
Yeah.
Yeah. In support of Chris.
In support of Chris.
Yeah.
So, God bless you. Thank you very much. You're, listen, people just get, they get agitated by it because they think I'm offended. I'm not offended. I know what Greg's doing. And like, I had to have a conversation with a friend this week. Teasing is fine when you know the other person has your best interest at heart.
And the dank memes.
And it's, yeah, and it's funny, and it's like, you know, it's good-natured ribbing. Now, when it's a cold shot, and you're just being rude, then, you know, if you're in on the joke, it's okay, you know? Harry knows that we're not racist. Harry knows that we love him dearly. Dear, dear, dear friend Harry Price.
Oh, the check shows up at the end of the month. Yeah, you're not racist.
Exactly right. Yeah. We buy Harry's love, and that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay, too. Sometimes you've got to buy love. Yeah. We all go through a love dry spell. What? What just happened?
Yeah.
You know, it was, Jeremiah is like, I don't know what he's maybe snapping or something.
I'm snapping, but I have a very old droid, so it takes 10 minutes to get started.
I show up at Blackacre last night to the Liberty meetup, and like I sit down, and dozens of phones come out and start taking photos of me. It's like Greg has started a trend, too, where it's like, everybody just starts taking photos of me to send to Greg, like, put this on a Photoshop. Like, I sit down and immediately, there were probably, what, 10 people at that table?
Yeah, I bet about six
when
pulled their phones out.
When a celebrity shows up, you take their freaking picture.
Exactly. Dear leader.
I was like, I feel like Heidi Klum right now. I feel so pretty.
Oh. So,
Gerdau, huh?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You melt.
They are a fine, fine Brazilian corporation.
That's right. No jet fuel will melt those steel beams.
Nope, not at all. Well, shall we discuss what's been going on in the news this week?
I guess. Why not? So
fill us in. Set up this week's show for us, Chris.
I don't know what we're talking about. No, we've got to talk about this lady who, listen, the higher the hair, the closer to God. That's what I always say. And Kim Davis.
And if you're from the mountains in Kentucky, you're real close to God.
Oh, yeah. And Kim Davis, a county clerk down in Kentucky.
Rowan County.
On her fourth marriage, is standing up for marriage. She is now, in all fairness to Kim, she had three marriages. Got married to the fourth guy and then found Jesus. So I'm sure it's going to work out now because Christian people don't get divorced.
Well,
everyone shut up.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, if you're going to pick a martyr, maybe not pick one that looks like she's nuts and has had four marriages, because nothing destroys the institution of marriage like divorce. Trust me. My marriage was destroyed by the institution of divorce. And I guess I could... I don't want to gloat. I don't want to be too happy about it. It's been 2 years. Things are different now. But, you know, she just looks like she's absolutely out of her mind, freaking insane. Harry?
My other thing though, is how did they really, like, find her? Like, what gay... Did, like, every, like, gay couple, like, in the country just try to go to every backwoods county clerk and try to get a marriage license to try to find that one that, you know, said no? Because you're gonna find one.
Sure. Well, that's
part... No, this has been happening.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is this has been happening in Louisiana and in a couple other states. This is just the first one that really drew widespread attention because of all the beautiful context that surrounds this. One, the marriages. Two, she's Pentecostal.
Oh.
So that's always fun. You know, when you can... And she also is being held in contempt of court. When that happened, this thing escalated and exploded. Liberty Law Center, who is by the Southern Poverty Law Center, has named them as an anti-LGBT hate organization but the Liberty Law are representing her for free, and they go around seeking out people who exercise their religious liberties in the face of the law and let what Jesus said trump the law of the land. And that's who's representing her, and they need this so they can fundraise, so they can continue seeking out these individuals and representing them for free. And then the Southern Poverty Law Center loves it because they'll get flooded with donations as well at this outrage of a perceived hate organization, I guess, flagrantly violating the laws on the... Well, the lack of laws on the book in the state of Kentucky, which is really what makes this interesting.
Yeah, you know, previously we just Greg and I off air were discussing the congressman. He's actually the local congressman down there, Thomas Massey, and he essentially put on his Facebook a post 2 days ago. An interesting point about it, and it's probably the one way that you can at least try to defend Kim Davis and what she's saying. Is that she took an oath to the Constitution of the state of Kentucky. She's an elected officer or an elected official, and she has not faced re-election yet. So she's claiming, I had a certain set of rules when I ran for this office. I agreed to serve in this office, and I'm continuing based on my moral obligation to the Constitution that I swore an oath to that said that this was the rule of the land. So I'm not going to, you know, I am not going to distribute licenses, and she's not giving them not only to gay couples, she was not giving them to any couples. What, you know, is it the right thing to do? No, it's not what I would do. I would probably have resigned my position and moved on and, you know, quietly gone on to whatever the next thing is if, you know, if you truly have those convictions. But it's certainly an interesting argument. And I think, honestly, the deep cause of this, or the root cause, is that instead of dealing with this through the legislatures at the, you know, the state levels or the federal, you know, through Congress, once again they've gone to a Supreme Court decision, which, you know, this to a natural conclusion that the gay marriage debate was going to be over in 4 years, 5 years. It had completely shifted, and now we have a fundraising tool for the next 20 years for both sides.
That's the thing, is there's no incentive to get this settled for either side. There's no incentive for the Republicans. The longer they drag this out, the longer they can fundraise on it. Cause it's like we were talked earlier. There's abortion, guns, and gay marriage. That is the only revenue source for outrage for the Republican Party as it exists today. They can talk about tax cuts. And I'll tell you what, though, the new hot one, I forgot about this earlier, is immigration.
Yep.
Protectionism, or, you know, basically closed borders, has Donald Trump has rocketed to the top of the polls by hitting a chord that I would have never thought in a million years.
I thought that was over. 10 years ago, that mattered. And in the last 5 or 6 years, it hasn't mattered. And then Donald came on the scene, and man.
And that's all he talked
here
about.
Here it is.
Yeah. And that stirred it up and just kind of just jet rocketed out of there. Yeah.
And now everyone else is following his lead. I mean, you can't get a Republican candidate other than Rand Paul to talk negatively, or Jeb Bush to talk negatively about Donald Trump. I mean, Ben Carson, the one he's tied with in Iowa right now, someone asked Trump, and Trump is really good about this. Trump won't hit you if you don't hit him first. And someone asked him about what he thought of Ben Carson being tied with him, and Trump said, well, you know, the only thing I can say is that as a doctor, I can't see that he will be as well, or he is as well qualified as I am for creating jobs in America.
A nurse or two, and that was about it.
Yep. And so then they asked Ben Carson's people, and they go, well, Donald Trump's always said very nice things about me. And so Ben Carson's playing it beautifully in that he isn't going to let Trump have his moment to upstage him and let this thing play out. But other than Rand and Jeb, there is no one standing up to him. And that shows you how popular this immigration thing is that goes along with...
Which is so surprising to me. I just don't... the jobs... I mean, I imagine if you polled right now, jobs would be at the top of the issues that people care about, but you don't hear people like hyperventilating about it like you did 5 years ago.
Unemployment is 5%.
Right. So so the protectionist strain is, I guess I just don't get it, but I, you know, having been out on the campaign trail pretty extensively with a gubernatorial candidate, I get the type of folks out there. I mean, there's a whole lot of them out there. I mean, it makes up most of the country. I mean, and it's not like NASCAR fans that are the Ducker Jibs type people. I mean, it's like, go to your typical mega church and the people who make $150,000 a year, they're just as, well, I just think we should build a wall as the rest of them. You know, and but I just don't get it. I don't understand it. I never have been like an you know, I've not always been open borders. Now I just kind of care less because I just don't, I don't, it's just imaginary lines. We just are drawing imaginary boundaries. Why is there such a huge attraction to the immigration issue? Anyone?
I see it happening. And, you know, we kind of had, you know, we were talking about Kim Davis, and now I shouldn't have thrown in Trump and immigration, but if you see what's going on is not they took our jobs. What's going on is cultural preservation. And you're seeing that more than anything. You see the Donald's response when Jeb Bush responded in Spanish to a question asked of him in Spanish. Donald Trump made fun of Jeb Bush. He said, you know, this is America and we should be speaking English, which is really funny too.
Which is an interesting. Yeah, we're going to somehow in the world, when we have a world that's politically on fire, we're going to have an English as a first language debate for the presidential.
We will. Oh, yeah. We're not there yet, but we're getting there. Yeah. And you look at it, you say, is cultural preservation something that we have ever really had in a presidential debate? I wouldn't say so. I wouldn't say so because we haven't been at that tipping point, which I think we are now, where it used to be with the immigration debate, illegal aliens, it was sort of on the radar with Elias Gonzalez, and that was during Bush's presidency, and then it went away.
That was Clinton.
Yeah, it was Clinton.
Was Elias Clinton?
Yeah, Elias Gonzalez. Clinton. That was Janet Reno, I think, that went and took him out.
Was it really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's been a while ago.
Yeah,
man.
God, it's been a lot on our thought.
He's like 30 now.
Yeah.
But then it kind of fell baseball off. Player?
You know, the Republican Party had settled around the idea that we need to start reaching out to the Hispanic vote. We can't be anti-immigration because if we do, we're going to lose every election from here until the end of time. What that has been flipped on its head. Basically, the appearance of Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz, their whole promotion and being brought up and groomed within the Republican Party is now on its face the exact opposite of what the Republican Party is supporting and championing right now. And with the refugee crisis, like if you look what's going on in Europe right now, the reason people don't just welcome people in with open borders is because they're different. It's because they're not already culturally assimilated. It's because
he's sitting right there.
Yeah, they come in with weird languages, weird food. They smell funny.
Well, they set up their own neighborhoods and then they don't, since they're not reached out to, they stay in their own neighborhood. And if you look at it, I posted an article in the chat room before the show. In France right now, for years, France, because of colonialism, has worried about the browning of France. And it's what all the cultural elites have talked about.
He's right there.
He's not French.
Don't say browning.
And in Marseille right now, 40% of the population is Muslim. So Marseille, France, culturally... A very strong culturally rich area in the second most populous city in France is what this author referred to as Muslim occupation. The reason they said that is because they have deployed paratroopers, they have deployed military into Marseille, trying to take it back because the Muslim population has set up checkpoints, and they have taken total control of it of a city in France. And so, if you're bringing any, like they stopped a milk truck that was bringing aid because it's also tons of poverty from all the immigrants that haven't really, you know, it's that first generation that hit the American shores,
right?
Yeah. So they're, you know, doing any job, work as hard as they can, make as much money as they, you know, and then their children hopefully move up. But what's happened is it's taken this beautiful area and turned it into more of a slums, the old bad neighborhoods in New York, the boroughs.
Yeah, Marseille is Marseille. Whatever.
Marseille.
Let's Hoosier this up a little bit.
It's in the south of France. It's right at the tip. It's one of the most. I mean, the French Riviera. It's one of the most beautiful cities.
Je ne comprends pas d'où est Spigny. Watch your French, please.
Are you speaking Haitian?
It's French. It was your native tongue, French Canadian.
Yeah, and it's just this beautiful resort town, tons of tourism. Maybe not anymore.
No, because what's happened is the reason they've been able to take away power from the local authorities is the hashish trade from Northern Africa. Since that's where the French colonies were, they came in. they had the monopoly on force because they had all the heavy artillery. And since in France they've basically banned guns for even the police, they haven't been able to take over, take back control. Even they've launched three different invasions into their own land. But the cartel, like, they're basically no different than the Mexican drug cartels. Hmm. They control it all, and they're North Africans. It's hashish that makes them wealthy, and it is amazing to see a city in a first world country, highly developed, barely. Beautiful area.
It's France. Come on.
Yeah. Well, in comparison to the rest of the world. And yet they can't even control it. And the reason why is that cultural, over time, the culture of the people that came into France took over and dominated the traditional French culture, which no other countries worked harder to preserve, by the way.
Absolutely.
And passed more laws to protect.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't even matter. And so you're seeing this, though, in the rest of Europe with the Syrian crisis, where you have had 438,000 political refugees seeking asylum in EU countries, and they're at doing sit-ins in Budapest at train stations, bus stations. They can't go anywhere. What happens is the state doesn't provide for them except for emergency aid right away, and you end up with communities that already have ties welcoming them in that swell in ranks and swell in those neighborhoods, and then they become the politically dominant force, and then the strength of the existing culture or the dominance of the existing culture slowly erodes away.
So that's the fear that the Republicans
that's what they have
in the States have.
They see it happening everywhere else.
Overburdened in any area, whether it's Dearborn, Michigan, or a town
which people
in
call
South
Dearbornistan.
But this is the story of America. I mean, if you have a very distinct culture like the French culture, or a very distinct culture like the British culture, or you have a very distinct culture like the Estonian culture, I don't know, but each European country has their own distinct culture, until you kind of get to the central Baltic states, you know, from Poland on down, where there's just been so many different occupations and invasions over the course of history that it all constantly blends. It blends all together. But
they speak Russian and German depending on who's in town.
Right. But America is the story of immigrants, where every 100 years you're massively reshaped by a different group of immigrants. You know, in the 1700s, it's the English and the Spanish coming in and overwhelming the Native American populations. In the 1800s, 1900s, it was Asian and Irish populations and Germanic populations coming in, and then now it's Hispanic populations coming in and reshaping the culture. And American culture is a melting pot. It's not... it's an influence of many different... American culture is equality. The whole point of America is that we welcome immigrants to come in and reshape culture a little bit and mold it and persuade it. I mean, I love parallel Mexican food. Who doesn't?
But 100 years ago, the reason, I think one of the reasons, we were a younger country, had different needs at the time, but we were going through industrial revolution, and we needed massive amounts of labor to keep things churning. And now we're at a point where our economy's barely moving fast enough to maintain jobs and create jobs for our own people. And there's an education issue that, we can barely educate our own people at a level that they can find jobs. So as you have people coming over, then it becomes a concern that they're just going to be takers. They're not actually going to be productive.
Because
they don't have the education.
Right. Yeah. Well, the difference between 100 years ago and now is that 100 years ago, America still had the make it or don't culture, where you can set out and it's an entrepreneurial spirit and everybody has a chance to make it. And there's equality in everybody starts at the same, maybe not everybody's going to finish at the same place, but everybody can. There's no classes here. Whatever other culture people come from, there's always been classes, and there isn't one here. And over the course of 100 years, we've developed stronger classes, and we also, as Greg pointed out before, have a social safety net that we have to protect, which we did not have 100 years ago. And in a place like France and Britain, where they have cradle to grave socialist policies, they financially cannot afford to add rapid amounts of population that are going to come in as low-income workers and not pay for what they use.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to bring in people who are sick and people who... Now, granted, they are going to bring people who aren't able-bodied. Oh, who are able-bodied. There's a lot of farmers that would like some immigrants to come in to help. But those... There's not that many jobs for that, you know. Most people, that you are correct, they're going to need someone to be able to work in an office building, to be able to do something like that. And us having, you know, that type of economy where we're going to just have mostly, like, tech people or most people, like, doing service industry or I think a couple podcasts we talk about just being creative, just doing that type of creative entertainment technology. We don't really need that many people to like, push that unless something else happens. And a lot of our different policies have made it so we can't take that in. The way we screwed up our education system, we've made our high school diploma almost basically useless. It's a piece of junk.
An associate's degree is almost useless.
Yeah, associate's degree.
A bachelor's degree is useless.
I used to like toss bachelor degree technician by paperwork in the garbage. It's like, oh, you got your bachelor's degree in IT? That's garbage. You know, show me what you really can do. Because like I've seen them come in and like they've got their bachelor's from like different schools. They don't really know that much. They've never really had any practical application of any of their IT stuff that they do know. And whatever school they got through, they seem like they just coasted through it. But
and it's probably outdated. That, you know, what they were learning was 4 years behind where technology was at the time.
Exactly. Tech moved too fast. Well, the other thing with it is like a lot of the bachelor's degrees that we do, like we're pumping out people with bachelor's degrees, but we're pumping out people with history degrees, gender studies degrees, English degrees.
We just need better central planning.
Common Core is going to fix it, Jeremiah.
Is a lot of with the dealing with refugees, a lot of refugee planning or immigrant planning is done by people who are not close to the border, who are never going to probably touch these people in that border, and yet they're planning on how they come in and what they need when they come in.
There legitimately have not been any policy updates to immigration and the way that the bureaucrats deal with it in my lifetime, I think. You know, 86 is when they did the amnesty thing. But you don't see, you know, the number of folks that come in, you just don't see it.
No. And, you know, it's weird because we're older as a country and because now we do have a history and we are aging. It's no longer, the United States was, it's not so much we welcomed you, it's that, listen, anyone can come here and you can make it or you can't and it's up to you. You decide.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now it is the scarcer resources. Now we have
massive obligations for all of our people.
Yeah. And so the truth is we need immigration because immigration drives growth.
Mm-hmm.
That, for us, though, seems to have to be tempered with, well, we're so used to the red, white, and blue, the founding father story. In our history of, you know, look at Donald Trump, make America great again. We don't have any victories anymore. We don't win. All these are nostalgic. They're nostalgic emotions, and that's where the baby boomers are. And then even the greatest generation that's at the end of their tail life, they were the ones that last won a war. And that is why that his what he's talking about so appealing. But I just didn't ever think we'd get to the point where we were going to be culturally protective because that's such an anti-American trait in and of itself. But I guess it's that we have such a shared history now. People don't want to forget it or see it be overthrown or rewritten almost.
Right.
And I think you see that, quite frankly, that ties back into the Kim Davis thing in the tradition of religious liberty. You look at many of the places in Europe where the Muslim populations that aren't, you know, they're not Al-Qaeda, they're not ISIS, they're not, you know, Jabhat al-Nusra.
They're just people who don't want their children killed.
Exactly. They're literally seeking asylum.
They just want a chance to live. Mm-hmm. Not even thrive, just live and have some food and, yeah. And we see in America and over there, I mean, the whole point of people get frustrated by their politics and the politicians and the rulers. And it's a story as old as history itself. And so we need somebody to blame and push the blame off on. So we choose a minority and the weaker the minority, the easier it is to blame them for all of the problems that we ourselves created. And so they're choosing Muslims over there. We do that here. Here we choose Hispanics are kind of the most easily identifiable minority, you know, they're the reason that we're struggling, not the fact that you all vote like dumbasses.
Right.
It's the immigrants' fault. And in Britain, there's a very serious anti Muslim immigration view. Somebody like Geert Wilders, who's the woman here? Pamela Geller.
Yep, Pamela Geller.
Who's out of her fucking mind. I mean, that woman is nuts. And is just, she is a Hitler type mentality. You know, she just listen. It's not like ISIS doesn't pose a threat to people in Syria and Iraq, and there are Muslims who, you know, Islamic extremists who want to blow America up, but it's not every Muslim. And Geert Wilders is like, is it Iceland? Where's Geert Wilders at? Or Britain?
I think, isn't he off the top? I know who you're talking about because I've seen the pictures, but is it Sweden?
Sweden.
Yeah, because he's the head of the far right party that now holds the majority in the house, or in their house.
And so all across Europe, he has become the symbol of anti-Muslim sentiment and, you know, tours around basically.
I'm going to go with Dutch. The internet says Dutch.
Okay.
From Holland.
But
the land of Rick Smits. Yeah. And Ari Leyendyke.
So yeah, I mean, they are using these populations to blame every crime, every societal ill on these refugees who just want a chance to not be gassed by their own leaders.
I mean, America, the pilgrims came over for religious liberty. Yeah. These people are seeking political asylum because they're living under religious tyranny. Yeah. There is no more American sentiment than fleeing the land you're coming from for, you know, from that religious tyrannical oppression that they're under in statist, you know, at the same time. And yet everywhere in the world is rejecting them.
Yeah. Well, and the British are just worried that what they did to the Irish, someone's going to do to them, you know, like move some people in, you know.
Free them?
Yeah. Move them into the northern part of their, their island, you know, bring in different stuff, try to vote them out of power, do different things.
Community
organize against them, try to push out a certain group of potato farmers, and,
And you look at that, and like Kim Davis is something I know Jeremiah, you know, is really well versed on, and so they bring their culture over. Let's say that we just opened our borders, truly, to the 500,000 or the 438,000 Syrian Muslims fleeing ISIS and then Assad and, you know, the way they're being treated in Turkey. And the United States welcomes them with open arms. Now, we have a tradition of religious liberty. Or you can't be forced, like Kim Davis, you can't be forced to carry out a duty. Apparently, you can be forced to carry out a duty regardless of your religious liberty or what your religious beliefs are. And they come over here and form little dominant political communities like in Dearborn and swell the ranks. And they start passing laws that are antithetical to what we believe. But then over time, they fill enough positions, they have enough state laws on the books, and you get into a situation where Sharia law, there's two or three laws that are similar to Sharia law, they're not called that, but then the Supreme Court says you can't have these, but it's not laws in the form of this is what needs to be done, it's just like the gay marriage ban. They ban certain behaviors.
Right.
Then what role does religious liberty play?
You know, this is why the libertarian, you know, view of this is so much simpler than when you get into the left or the right and the way they view it. You just don't want government involved at all. And when, you know, if you strip them from being involved, then you actually have your freedom. You know, gay marriage, it goes back to if you just simply don't issue marriage licenses of any sort, then we don't have to have this fight and we don't have to have the division. You can bring anybody into our population, and as long as you have the core non-aggressive principles and you really limit what government does, and they build roads and they enforce contract law and they provide for, you know, national security, you don't have to have these fights and these it's very simple. And, you know, things have changed so much just in the last two or three years in the United States with RFRA, with religious freedom, with gay marriage. It is an incredibly quickly changing world, and the nice thing as a libertarian is you don't have to change your position like the Democratic Party has in the last 3 years on gay marriage, or the Republicans have on immigration, or you know, whatever else they're fighting at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, by the way, I do want to point out that Kim Davis is a Democrat, so she's that she's that blue-blooded Eastern Kentucky Democrat,
which nobody has noticed.
Yeah.
And you know, her mom held that position for 26 years, and her, she was the deputy.
Her son is one of six. There are six or seven, basically subservient clerks. So basically, admin clerks. Exactly. Six of the seven clerks said they would issue the certificates.
Mm-hmm.
The son says no. So, so it's. I guess there's a little nepotism. If the parent, if her mother had the job. And then her son works there. You know, it's Rowan County, Kentucky, so whatever. But
you know, I think what it really is that the snakes at church, the venom has finally warped their brains to the point that they no longer can carry out the functions of public office.
If you have enough fate, they won't bite.
I know.
This just sounds like a bad Dukes of Hazzard episode.
You know what, though?
The Duke boys are in trouble now.
Oh, it makes a lot of sense, though, since government functions so poorly and Pentecostals are within it, it's the speaking in tongues that slows down the translative process of getting anything done. Are you guys Pentecostal?
I don't remember anymore.
I am. Yeah.
Episcopal.
Didn't you see the snakes? Didn't you see the snakes when you walked in?
Are you pure, Chris?
I am so
That's
pure.
What libertarians should adopt from the Pentecostals for purity.
Purity test.
This, the
if the rattlesnake don't bite.
Yeah, if it doesn't bite you, you're a libertarian. Oh man!
I think you're so right on when you say these two stories. All these stories tie into cultural preservation, and we want to control what we know because people just hate change, especially here in this area. I mean, here in Indiana, nothing ever changes. Like it's impossible to get anything.
Daylight
passed.
Savings. Yeah. Daylight,
the whole country's
a corn will burn, yeah. Man. Corn will burn.
The cows get confused, and we can't do it.
We are the last state to have no Sunday alcohol sales.
Mm-hmm.
Connecticut just passed it like a year or two ago.
We're recording this on a Saturday of Labor Day weekend, and I have to remember to buy beer today,
right? Mm-hmm.
Or else I have to go to Ohio on Sunday morning.
And it's so ridiculous. There's just no reason for it whatsoever, but it doesn't get passed because Hoosiers are so resistant to change. And these rural lawmakers get all this pushback from their religious constituents saying don't allow this. And they also get lots and lots of donations from beer distributors.
Yeah, that's what it's really about.
Right.
You know, it's financial gain cloaked in Christ.
Right.
And all the local breweries lose all that money because you can get, you know, your growler on Sunday.
Exactly. The microbrewers want it this way.
I took a growler on a Sunday once. I should not have had Hooters wings that So you have this impulse from people who, in my estimation, are very stupid. And I say this as somebody who loves Jesus, and I believe that he was nailed to a cross to save us for our sins. But many of my people are just dumb and are buying into the culture war BS. And it is a distraction that has been crafted by whomever to keep us from our true mission of actually loving each other and continuing our movement towards holiness. And instead, we are so worried about trying to make everybody else holy. Mm-hmm. You know, we are going to pass as many laws as it takes and stand up for the laws that prevent people from sinning. And that doesn't work. You cannot legislate the heart. You can't.
That's a flawed version of Christianity.
It is. Yeah. It sounds a little bit, it sounds familiar, Pharisaical.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like the people that Jesus came to push out of the temple. These groups like Focus on the Family, while I enjoy their podcast occasionally, use this to raise money and then steer Christian church. Like if I go to a church and they're talking about how to be a more loving person, how to be a person who speaks the truth, how to grow spiritually, then I'm all in. But if I walk in and I hear that we're going to talk about abortion or gay marriage today or how to fight the culture for Christ, I'm out. Like I just don't want to hear it. And it's not because there may not be truth and merit to whatever is being said in those sermons. It's just that is not, in my estimation, the point of... That's not what we should focus on as Christians. And it's such a misguided opportunity. The evangelical church, I've said it time and time again, the Republicans and the evangelical church shot themselves right in the face by focusing on fighting the culture wars. And it's because, as Greg said, it is very easy to raise money when there's a fight. It's really easy when you are when you're fundraising off of division as opposed to inclusion. Now, I'm not saying that you have to accept everybody's lifestyle if you're a Christian. You shouldn't violate your moral beliefs. But if you're giving your funds and focusing what you're talking about and posting about on division, then you're probably missing the point. It's not that you can't have strong opinions, and I don't judge you for having those strong opinions because we're not supposed to judge. It's just that you are probably turning people off and away from the actual goal of what you're trying to achieve. The Christian church has alienated itself because of people like Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell and trying to make everything a culture war. And I'm sorry, that's great for fundraising, but it's not great for making people feel loved or
actually growing your church.
Or growing your church, or getting people to accept the gospel. And that is the whole point. It is that we're supposed to be representatives of love. Now, I say this knowing full well that there are people that listen to this podcast and go, wow, you are the worst Christian on the planet. And I own that. I certainly am. I am not necessarily a model for Christianity, but I would say that people who know me, I'm not a very judgmental person, and I'm a person that considers the welfare of both myself and the others around me. And I think in that way I'm a good role model. Now, in saying I don't really care what two people do with their penises or buttholes, maybe not something that Jesus would say, but certainly...
Well, he only said lay.
Yeah.
Right. So...
Are we like going NIV, not, King James, or the Message?
Right. Yeah. So... I forgot
my Bible.
I only go Aramaic. Everything else...
Yeah, which fan dub of the redub book of the fanfic do you want to read?
Pull up the ESV. Let's see what the ESV says.
Yeah.
Turn to Matthew 8. Matthew 2, please.
Well, a lot of it is... Because like when you start passing laws and forcing people to
I don't want
to
judge
it,
but that Bible feels awful new.
You're right.
Those pages don't never open very easily.
I don't see much highlighting in there, you Christian.
That's look at that one over there. Okay? go get that one and describe it.
Because he's upgraded. He's got the iBible.
This is the ESV Study Bible, and it's like built like a. It's built like a brick.
The Study Bibles are.
That's for beating the sins out of people.
Right. Exactly.
Give me the verse where Paul says to the Corinthians that Jesus' mixtape was fire.
it's right there on the end. That's it.
A stack of Bibles over here.
There's a whole stack. I have a lot of Bibles. There's a whole shelf behind you, and I've sold a ton. I like a good Bible. Yeah, this is my $120 calf leather Bible. Can you please describe what happened here? What is that? That would be my cat sharpening her paws.
Yeah, it's a,
My asshole cat broke my Bible. But no, this one's getting well-worn. It's, mm-hmm. You can see the... So I read the Bible. I like the Bible. It's a nice little book. Even if you aren't a Christian, you should probably read the Bible for cultural reasons.
It's written a bit like an Ayn Rand... tomb, but it's a wonderful book.
Let's not compare the Bible to Ayn Rand. This is actually good and readable and enjoyable to read. I would rather.
I've never talking about Atlas either. Shrug or the. Yeah.
I would rather shove my head into a blender than ever read anything Ayn Rand has ever written. Because
how do you know she didn't read some books of the Bible?
Because Ayn Rand and objectivists are the worst. All right, sorry. I'm bitter.
Well, you know the question no one's had, and it's always just the default of this discussion. Is there a benefit to cultural preservation? Because the people that are for it don't say why. It's just I don't like those people. The people that are against it say, well, clearly, they only point to the hypocrisy of it. Of well, look, America has no. Established cultural, cultural standards, and the debate that's been missing, and I've been looking for, is what is the benefit of it if there is one? How could it benefit a society? How could it be used to promote liberty in any form? And have you thought about that at all?
I'm actually trolling Spangle right now on the internet.
The main thing I was just say is like when you talk about like. Messing up like the American culture, but you're right. There's not really like there's like region of cultures, but you see a lot of quote unquote like white people. They won't really say like they won't go like I'm an American white guy. They're like, well, I'm Irish, I'm British. So they'll bring that culture over. Like I'm German, I'm Russian. They'll try to like live that here. And it's like it reminds me of that stupid ancestry like .com guy who was like, I thought I was German, then I got my DNA tested, found like I was Scottish.
Mm-hmm.
Quote unquote, turned out I was supposed to hate myself.
Quote unquote white people. All right, let's have a Bible.
Well, because white people is such a general term. It's like when you go white, are you talking about Irish, Italian?
Let's dive into the Bible.
German,
let's have
Belgian,
a Bible study together. Let's all hold hands and pray. So this is kind of, this is Romans 1, and this is sort of the most...
Roman.
It's the most clear definition or judgment against homosexuality in the New Testament. And for all of you anti-Christian people, a Christian doesn't live their life according to the Old Testament. Those are... The law has been demolished. You're not supposed to. They're good guides for life, but
it's been undone by the blood of Jesus.
Right. And so a Christian lives their life according to the New Testament, and the Old Testament is a guide, but
Jesus
not necessarily the law. So the point is, we are covered by grace. All sins, if you believe in Jesus Christ, are covered by that. And then the Bible is sort of your instruction manual. All right. This is we're Bible study for heathens, for all you sinners. Greg looks like he's about to be lit on fire. Now, in Romans, this is Paul writing to the Romans, and this is the most. I have a point here. So this is Romans 1:24. Therefore, God gave them over in their sinful desires of their hearts to sexual impurity for the degrading of their bodies with one another. They exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshipped and served and created things rather than the Creator, who is forever praised. Amen. Because of this, God gave them over to shameful lusts. Even their women exchanged natural sexual relations for unnatural ones. In the same way, men also abandoned natural relations with women who were inflamed with lust for one another. Men committed shameful acts with other men and received in themselves the due penalty for their error. Furthermore, just as they did not think it worthwhile to retain the knowledge of God, so God gave them over to a depraved mind so that they do what ought not to be done. They have become filled with every kind of wickedness, evil, greed, and depravity. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, and malice. They are gossips, slanderers, God-haters, insolent, arrogant, and boastful. They invent ways of doing evil. They disobey their parents. Children, listen. They have no understanding, no fidelity, no love, no mercy. Although they know God's righteous decree that those who do such things deserve death, they not only continue to do these very things, but also approve of those who practice them. So the strongest condemnation against homosexuality is couched in a laundry list of other sins. And any Christian believes that we are all sinners saved by the grace of God. Therefore, all sins are equal in the eyes of God. So the Bible talks more about good spending habits and not being a liar and not not being filled with evil and wickedness and greed and depravity and being arrogant and boastful and inventing ways of doing evil. It to me just seems like a total miscalculation on the Christian's part to make the issue that they lead with to evangelize an issue that has been given such a small portion of the, what are you doing?
My brain went somewhere with that whole.
Were you thinking about like the women exchanging?
No, when you talked about you were talking about how the Bible was. When you were talking about like the whole sentence was about spending habits, and my brain instantly went to like so, a congregation full of a bunch of Jews wrote a book about spending habits.
Stop it. You're not supposed to be the racist one on this podcast.
This is the New Testament. Yeah. There are no Jewish jokes in it at all.
It, not allowed. No, except Zacchaeus. That guy was a total joke. Hey-o. So my point is, this is a very small portion of the Bible. It is a clear condemnation. It's hard if you're... I don't know. I don't want anybody to feel judged or anything, but it's... Except Christians, I want you to feel judged.
Yeah.
Because it's just, Jeremiah is also a Christian. It just seems to me to be such a, it's the predominant issue that Christians talk about, and it's given such a small condemnation in the Bible, and we just miss the point totally in our churches, and people like Kim Davis make everybody look bad because she looks like... she doesn't look like a warrior for the faith, full of love and grace and power. She looks like somebody who is hateful and emotionally retarded.
She looks like an Eastern Kentucky pinup girl, Chris. Don't pick on her.
You're talking about Miss Rowan County, 1983.
That's right.
Right.
You know, I, you know, the Christians have a bad habit at times of focusing on the wrong things. And yes, you know, obviously, it's homosexuality is condemned in the Bible, but so is stealing. So, you know,
but it's not.
So is wickedness. So, but is
homosexuals,
adultery.
Homosexuals are not condemned in the Bible. Homosexual sex,
yes, is the action, yes,
and the exact same words are used for sex outside of marriage, looking at a woman and lusting after her. Like, the standard for sexual purity starts in the heart. It even says in that, you know, I emphasize the word heart in there because that is what God cares about. God cares about your heart and how you view other people, not necessarily your genitals. You know, it's about what you worship and your heart. And so Christians who have four marriages and cheat on each other and have sex outside of marriage and have sex before they get married and have affairs on AshleyMadison.com want to sit there and judge gay people. And it doesn't. It just makes you a total hypocrite. It makes you a total Pharisee. So,
it's pretty brutal.
Yep.
And you know, for those that have gotten to be very very high profile on the Christian side, on the Christian right, you know, any time that they, you know, if you're gonna really publicly push this and you're gonna be the persecutor, we'll call it a persecutor of people on the you know on. On the, I don't LGBT side, you're going to be held to a very high standard. So as soon as you're Josh Duggar and you have the Ashley Madison thing come out, then you are going to take a absolute beating.
You're
going to
take a total ass beating, yeah. Josh Duggar.
I think we should keep this in the family, guys, and not judge outside.
All right, let's judge Harry.
No, but
make one Jew joke. Oh.
Should she, as an elected official, have the... Do you have a right to religiously object to performing a function of a job?
I don't think so. I think we've talked about soldiers before, where when you were a soldier in the military, you give up... You pledge yourself and your beliefs and your life and everything to the state.
Wait a minute.
That's voluntary.
What if you're a sheriff and you don't want to enforce certain laws?
You are a functionary of the state. And if you don't want to perform the functions of the state, then don't get involved in the state. This woman voluntarily ran for elected office. It's not like this issue was not discussed ad nauseum before she was elected office. She knew that this might come up at some point. And she swore an oath to the people that elected her and to the public that she serves, that she will carry out the functions of what the state says. Just as if you were a soldier, even if you are a soldier who voluntarily signed up
always
for...
Always goes back to the soldiers.
You signed up for the military, you can't morally object to something because you signed up to be a functionary of the state, and if you don't like it, quit.
Now, she's also a representative of the people, and the logical point is, like Thomas Massey said, she represents what they want. Now, if she was a libertarian and she did not hand out marriage licenses on the basis that she doesn't believe the state has any role, how would you respond to this? Would she be a champion of liberty? If you were like the same thing as a sheriff who decided not to arrest people for speeding tickets because I've got better things to do?
Sure. Just as jury nullification is a hot issue for libertarians. You can swing it either way.
Isn't it funny how this changes when we add the Christian element?
Yeah.
Of course.
When it's a libertarian and a philosophically based, you say, I'm not going to enforce this law because I don't think the government has any role in marriage, regardless of my duties as a county clerk, and I'm not going to continue the oppression of the state.
But the thing is, with the Christian thing, she's got to understand is like, no, if you really believe your God doesn't want gays to marry, then a sheet of paper written down by another man on this stupid piece of rock is not going to hurt anything. It's not going to do anything. All it is just a contract from the state. Granted, they called it marriage. You probably call your other thing marriage, but you don't. The Christian Church didn't put a trademark on the word marriage. Granted, you know, if the Christian Church
the state stole marriage at the Council of Trent.
If the Christian Church don't want gays to get married, then they should change the name to something else. And then it's like, this is what you do in a Christian marriage. Let's call it carriage. I don't care.
A domestic union.
Domestic union. And this is a holy domestic union.
We'll call it the hairy and the lazy.
So you do a holy domestic union. Yes, the government, the state, they do marriages. We do holy domestic unions.
Why do the Christians have to give up the name marriage? They had it first.
Yeah, they should have it first. The state stole it.
But they don't have a trademark on it. Sorry, it's open source word. Anyone can use it.
A nerd to the end.
You know, I've always said the solution to this, because realistically, we're never going to just... It would take a minimum of 50 years to get the state to stop issuing marriage licenses. The alternative is the state could offer a civil union license, and then if a church will notarize it, it is a marriage recognized before the state. All you'd have to do is have your, you know, parish two witnesses, whatever, like sign them, you know, they sign it, say it was done in a church, we recognize it as a marriage, it is on file with the state as a marriage. It satisfies everyone. The only issue would then come down to churches willing to acknowledge homosexual marriages, and that's a battle between the churches, and it doesn't have to
become
a political thing. Each church
can choose that individually. They don't have
exactly. And so you don't bring it into the state where there's no, you know, the fights are never settled. You keep, let the churches fight it out. Let their interpretations be the ones, and then regardless, the state just has it right now on record that XYZ has rights to someone that passes away because they're two males and they've lived in a domestic partnership for 30 years.
Well, that's basically what the state is. Like, when the state gets into marriage, all they do is enforcing a contract.
Right.
To a Christian, going down to some stupid government state place to get married. So that's not to you. You should automatically not think of that as a marriage. Your marriage is when you go to your church, stand in front of your congregation, and you promise to be with someone.
Yeah.
And in front of your God, to your God. That is marriage to you. Going down to fill out a license, a sheet of paper,
it's an administrative event.
Yeah, it's administrative.
It's a contract. So it's like a business arrangement.
Right, yeah. So Christians getting involved in that fight is just dumb. It's just, to me, why does it matter? That is a man's law. That's man's law on words written on paper. And if you believe your words written in your book is given from your God, that means more to you. That should mean more to you.
Like, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's?
Yep.
Yeah. Our Indiana's Senate candidate in 2012 was Andy Horning. And I don't know if you guys saw this or not, but Andy, you know, talking in his commentary on the Kim Davis thing, he wrote a couple of short paragraphs that I'm going to read into the record just to bore y'all. Andy basically was saying that he'd do his level best to nullify most of everything he calls politics these days. He'd use his oath to the Constitution to say no to pretty much everything our government does. He'd defy judges, oppose our manner of unconstitutional, unjust, and immoral laws, and wouldn't you? Wouldn't that be wholesome fun that does real good? Are you holding that in mind? Can you think of other things that you'd like to nullify, throw down, expunge, erase, and otherwise eliminate from our enormous festering pile of stinky, rotten politics? If you're anti-war, you want people to start disobeying orders, right, Chris Spangle?
Yeah.
You want pro-government. Even if you're pro-government, you want to smash the laws that restrain politics, right? We all want what we think is right, and in spite of the laws, we're all wrong. I think... What Andy's saying is, you know, once you do have that power in government, you're going to use whatever authority you think you have, even if you push it beyond the limits that you get yourself thrown in jail.
Listen, when you play by the state's rules, you end up with the state's consequences. So you're in jail for violating your conscience. You knew it was possible. You knew it could happen. I don't find her to be someone that is worthy of worship or even disdain. She's just really... It's just status gonna state, yeah. Honestly. You know, she's not somebody that I hold up as a villain or a hero. I don't fault her for her Christian beliefs. I believe she's sincere in what she's doing. She has every right to go to prison to stand up for those beliefs, just as other people have every right to try and turn her into a villain for those beliefs. I think it's all pretty silly. I just don't.
You think this is just a 1 or 2 week story and we move on?
No, this is going to last for months. It's a hot issue right now because, just like Greg said, it's cultural preservation. It's a fundraising issue. People are going to gin it up. People love to have the controversy because Christians love to try and preach holiness against gay people while they go out and get on Tinder and fuck random strangers. So, you know, the guy.
Not all of them. Let's be clear. This isn't the majority.
Let's get rid of all these gay people.
It's just the ones that lead political action committees.
Hold on. Let me. Yeah, exactly. It's like, let's get rid of these gay people. They need to be holy. Meanwhile, I'm going to go get a gay male prostitute.
Now, the question, though, like, look at with Quakers and the draft conscription. Quakers are granted a religious exemption from duty based on religious liberty because they were pacifists. I think they're going to cite that in her defense. She's being held in contempt of court. She's an elected official. Although it is voluntary rather than conscripted, that's going to be the real issue.
Of course, because a Quaker, somebody like a Quaker or an Amish person or somebody who is legitimately a pacifist who lives out those values in their daily life should not be conscripted and forced to participate in something that
she has
horribly
lived
offends
those values.
Them.
She has never been gay married.
Right. Yeah. But she voluntarily joined, put her name on the ballot to work for the state and execute the state's duties.
And the laws on the books at the time she was elected did not state this.
But yep. this is this.
Right. Yeah.
But then you have
changed.
But they, then you have legal anarchy. No, but then you have legal anarchy. Your duties.
You're being triggered now himself.
No, I'm being triggered by common sense and the
whoa,
rule
whoa.
Of law.
America, common sense.
You, if you put your name on the ballot, you agree to serve out the next 2, 4, 6 years, 8 years,
no,
whatever
you,
it may
you
be.
You agree to represent your constituents. If you are a bureaucrat like Secretary of State appointment,
no.
then you agree to do what you can, you know, do your duties.
When you are elected and you are sworn in, you are elected to uphold the Constitution of said state or country and all the laws therein. And if the law is unconstitutional, she can challenge that. And that may be her strategy. But there's a legal process. There's legal processes towards doing that.
But there's no law.
Not performing your duties. But there but the
there's
law
the
is
absence
what
of a law.
The law wait a minute, is what yeah. the Supreme Court and the judicial system now says it is.
No, but they only said that you can't ban it. They didn't say that gays can... They never licensed homosexuals to marry. They just said that you can't ban homosexual marriage. And so the state... then it would go to the state of Kentucky,
mm-hmm.
who right now...
Ban it.
...defines it. They define right. marriage as man and a woman. Because mm-hmm. they have stone... What the overturning of DOMA did was created 50 different interpretations and definitions of DOMA at the state level. By banning it outright and only overturning that and the federal definition of marriage, it created a situation where there is no law in Kentucky that says
you shall
everyone
have
has equal access to the law, you know, regardless of what you think the Equal Protection Clause says. Until that we get specification on that, right now the law for her is marriage is between a man and a woman. I am elected by my constituents. I will carry out the law as it exists. I just can't carry out banning gay marriage. I mean, that there is no law in Kentucky that has that on the books. So she's not an agent that would enforce the ban.
Can't she petition her General Assembly, her governor?
They're not
can't
in she, yet. You're sure, once again, the governor's not calling
General?
a special session, so she has
mm-hmm.
to wait.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Are these arguments I would make? No, but I think she does have a defense, and mm-hmm. it may not be the best one politically for her, but I think she does have some legitimate arguments that her side can make.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to make anyone upset. I'm just like, to really discuss this issue, it's just not clear cut because, one, the context matters of being Christian because it's easy to mock.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas if she was a libertarian and saying, well, I'm not doing it, she'd be a champion and, you know, Justin Amash would probably do a photo op with her.
Right.
So it's... You know, in order to really grasp this issue, you have to understand that there is no gay marriage law at the federal level that says, you know, any person can wed any person. All there is the absence of the definition of marriage federally, and that your state cannot ban homosexual marriage.
But why,
this is why there was so much hesitation on the side of some libertarians when they said, you know, when the Supreme Court took the action they did, because you're celebrating the state giving you a right,
uh-huh.
and but you create this mess.
But isn't the problem that the federal government is trying to define marriage when it's a state issue?
But they don't trust the states.
And they were, well, that's, well, fuck them. That's the Ninth and Tenth Amendment gives us the ability to put the middle finger right in their face. I mean, it is...
Well, Abraham Lincoln settled that pretty clearly when he didn't let him do it.
Exactly right.
Harry, what do you think?
Yeah,
yeah, Harry, what do you...
Well, like, I don't like marriage licenses because the reason why they...
What about of a marriage?
Why they try to bring... Why they brought in marriage licenses to begin with. To
one more marriage and Kim marriages. Davis will have 3/5 any way she wants to split them.
Right? Hold on, we didn't hear what you said, Harry. We were too busy making fun of your skin color.
I was saying they brought in marriage licenses to make sure that there weren't interracial marriages.
Yeah,
right.
That's the reason why it's on the books.
And... Would you like to speak on interracial marriage, Harry?
I'm no, actually, no, no. I'm not like speaking an interracial marriage. But like, I do like to politically, like, will she possibly get reelected in that county?
Yes.
Yeah.
She will win reelection.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
She's a legacy.
She's a hero, man. Yeah. She is.
Oh, yeah.
She's a cultural icon now.
I'm just waiting for the rest of the town as like who's going to go against her, because they're going to have to support her, because depending on how the court case goes, you know, they'll need that to fundraise. The other thing is going with it is there's so many different cases or stuff that might get brought up inside in Kentucky that it's going to be an interesting case just to watch.
For the record, this county in Kentucky, the entire county, 22,000 people.
Yep. That's
serious?
The whole county. Yeah. Yeah.
In
there's 116 counties in Kentucky, I think.
Yeah. And it's 22,000?
22,000 people.
All right.
Okay.
And you may not remember this, Spangle, but we did a show on gay marriage after DOMA was overturned. And mm-hmm. I was crucified for taking the position that this is the worst thing for liberty. I said that there are certain times when you have a federal government, you can interject... Or I believed it was right for them to interject and establish a federal DOMA of man and man, or you know, a person and person, and then leave that fight for polygamy up for another day. Mm-hmm. Get it settled now, because it's one of those rare circumstances where this going back to the states and decentralized freedom is going to lead to state-enforced oppression. And it has, because you got 36 states that wanted to ban it constitutionally. The rest of them are laughing and granting marriage licenses everywhere. You have the issue of people wanting to move between states for jobs.
Reciprocity is a real problem.
Yep. And you look at Salesforce.com wanted to move out of Indiana over RFRA. Mm-hmm. And I supported big government. I supported federal intervention. And I think it's clearly time to have one standard, because we can actually pass a law. And
there ought to be a law.
There ought to be a law, because I'm just going to, you know, the alternative is to let this thing organically.
There shouldn't be a law. There should actually be something in the Constitution. They should probably amend the Constitution, have the debate, and take it out of the court's hands, and do this one time right, and we don't have to fight over it for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Or fundraise off of it and watch the hypocrisy and talk about it over and over and over.
If we actually want good government, that's what needs to happen.
Yeah. And in the 1950s...
Which we've never had good government, but if we want it...
Yeah. The platonic ideal of bureaucratic skill. Like, it's... In the 1950s, civil rights was this. It was, well, the Republican conservatives that were rebranding conservatism said... This is just big government. It doesn't need to step in. It will happen organically. And then they got labeled racists because mm-hmm. they didn't stand on the side of the civil rights and federal intervention.
Right.
That is exactly what is going to happen to anyone that says, you know what? We don't need federal intervention. We don't need gay marriage defined, because all that does is pass a law and decrease liberty and statism and tyranny. And that's fine. You want to be principled and you want to die on the theoretical cross, you go ahead.
Right.
But if you want to be on the right side of where history's trending, get on the side. It's like the RFRA debate. Get on the side that establishes one single platform of marriage until the polygamy debate, or the bestiality, or whatever you want to call animal and human.
One man, one pineapple.
Yeah. You know, whatever you want to do, because we're at a point now where we're not going to have an election where all of America decides to remove marriage from the state.
I had a conversation with former intern Lauren Rumpler the other night.
How is Lauren?
Lauren's actually really grown up and mature and doing really well. She's in New Hampshire and has sort of made herself a celebritarian.
Muncie, Indiana, Ball State graduate.
Right. So she's doing really well. And her next big project is about polyamory. She's in a polyamorous relationship, and... She called to pick my brain about activism.
Polyamory is not when you're just happy all the time, right?
Right. That's when you love more. Many mm-hmm. love. Mm-hmm. Poly meaning many, love meaning, or amory meaning love.
Amo is the root of love.
Now, it's not like, it's not swinging. It's not like sexual perversion. She just has two boyfriends. And so polygamy, meaning many, many in a marriage, and polyamory are like, she's like, how can we make this a thing? How can we push for polyamory rights?
Her and Kathy Reisenwitz are two very big champions of this.
Yeah, and like she's like, now the gay marriage debate has opened that up and has, you know, spread the path wide open for us to start discussing polyamorous rights. And I said, go for it. Whatever. What do I care? You know, and if you got any friends, send them my way. Yeah, well, she's like, you know, that means that they're not easy, right? I was like, oh, okay. Well, good luck to you then.
Check your patriarchy.
Right. Check your patriarchy, dick. So, yeah, I mean, and you can check out Lauren Rumpler for more information. She's starting like a little.
Is she still objectivist girl?
Yes. She's
still free stater?
She has the. she's been exposed to objectivists. So her opinion of objectivists are closely resembling mine, has expressed earlier.
So she should learn that lesson about championing the cause of polyamory. Because just because we finally there's one issue that's finally breaking through, the backlash from being the antagonistic, violent, annoying, you know, champion of something after you just had a major change happen within communities. You are going to be the objectivist to the people that you're going at, to the people that just got homosexual passed. Yeah. They're going to say, we are just getting this done. We are right on the cusp of getting this completely finished. And now you're creating backlash and you are a problem for me.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Well, like it goes back to what Rush Limbaugh said about like almost like 10 years ago that he should just let gay people just go in marriage, just go under corporation law, just letting people incorporate.
I thought this was going to be about Donovan McNabb. I feel better now.
Anyways, yeah, just allowing people to incorporate. It deals with the polyamory thing and the polygamy. You just make corporations. You just make corporations.
Yeah, but I don't know. Are they people?
Corporations are people, right?
Do they vote?
Yeah, you get another butt.
How much can they vote?
Let's see. We'll
what's their ratio, if you will?
But, had to put a number on it, Harry.
A percentage or a fraction.
Tell you what, we're better with fractions. Let's compromise.
But allowing them to incorporate that solves like different rights, to like be able to use like get power of attorney to do different things, to also deal with inheritance stuff like that. Incorporation will solve a lot of it.
True.
And if you bring the tax credit that corporations get over to marriage, not marriages get over to corporations, it may help the economy out too.
I agree. And maybe that is a solution, but anything that involves more attorneys, I'm opposed to. And that creates more attorney jobs and sends more kids to law school, I'm violently against. I know. But I don't know. I think we've covered it well. I think we've given this the discussion. I think it really deserves. I
feel like the Bible stuff wasn't really in the show notes, but it made it better.
I know. You know.
Oh, things got a little crazy. I just it looked me up on Instagram, C Spangle, and just snapped a picture of the Bible and just told the people, listen, we got a little crazy this week.
We did.
I need to clean it. Look at the water. See, I don't allow you people to put things on my table so I don't get water rings, but I got it on the holy book. This is not good.
That looks like a big communion wafer is on there. I don't know.
Exactly.
I wonder if it floated on top of the water.
That's a miracle.
If it doesn't,
I was going to say, and like the whole stuff.
If your
about
communion wafers don't float on top of the water, then they're not Spangle communion wafers. Get your communion wafers today at communionwafers.com.
.net.
.net.
And one thing I'll add is that with the refugee crisis in the EU out of the Middle East, didn't Jesus say, give me your poor, your weak, your hungry? And I haven't heard of any churches with open arms in the United States welcoming in people that are fleeing.
They're probably afraid to.
Because they're Muslim.
No, the paperwork.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't have that G5 visa like Canada.
If you were to try to bring somebody in, I don't even know how you'd begin.
Well, they speak. They're all they're seeking political asylum.
Yeah,
which is different than since essentially they're North Korean defectors from a legal definition, and we have a strong history of allowing that until 9/11, and like so. For instance, of the 500,000 last year in the European Union who applied for political asylum from the Middle East, from ISIS and the other terrorist leading organizations, I believe it was only 117,000 actually got approved. Because there are limits on real resources. And the United States gave $4.3 billion last year to the United Nations to help with refugees seeking political asylum.
That would have built three stadiums in Atlanta, Georgia.
That's true. It would have.
We were real benevolent.
Brett Bittner could have watched all three of his favorite teams not go to the playoffs.
But see, this is another gripe of mine that I've talked about. Going back to the church thing, when we vote for an increase in the state, then we give more responsibility, more power, more moral authority to the state, be at whatever level, then we expect them to do more, and so we have less incentive to actually start helping people. And we just say, well, the government really should do something about that. So if the state were smaller and the impact were more direct, then people would have more of a... I know a lot of people. I talk to a lot of people. I'm friends with a lot of people. I've been in trouble. I've asked for help, and I've never had anybody say, no, I'm sorry. You know, and when people ask me for help, my empathy and compassion goes, okay, yes, I'll help you.
Or I'd love to, but I'm going to be out of town that week.
Right.
I'm really busy.
I just need to ride AutoZone turns to Uber on Libertarian Hill.
I really want to help you move, but
each one's an Uber trip. Each load.
I'll help you move, but the Uber meter will be running. So, that's a good idea.
Libertarian.
Do you need
help
to borrow my truck?
Yeah.
It's Uber rated.
Yeah. But I think human beings are moved by empathy. People are moved by a sense that I should help this person because in the future I may need help. So let's jump in there and make this person's life better. I would help you, but why don't you go to the township trustee? Or why don't you go down to the WIC office and see if you can get some welfare? Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't know that that's how that works, but all I know is I don't need to help because my taxes pay for it. And if I had more of my money, then I could probably give you more money and I could give you more help. You know, so we absolve ourselves of any responsibility to help our fellow man because the government takes care of it. So we're moved by it, but we say, man, the government really should do something about that. And so we turn the power over to an incompetent organization in any form of government to handle it. Bureaucracy fails every time because you just don't even see the taxes being taken out of your check. You have no idea where the money's going. You have no idea how it's being spent. If you donate your money and you are voluntarily taking money out of your paycheck and giving it to the Red Cross or to
any charity,
Samaritan's Purse or any other charity, you're following the dollars. You're going on charitywatch.org or whatever it is to see how their money is spent, and you're saying, wow, the Red Cross really is kind of just an organization to fund salaries. Mm-hmm, I'm going to give my money that gives 98% of my money to direct services.
I am not giving any more money to the Fogle Foundation. I am drawing that line right now. They have tricked me for the last time.
I know. Those admin costs are obscene.
Unreal.
So when you say Fogle tricked you, how? So
I want to give my money to people who wear tie-dye anyways.
That's right. WeAreLibertarians.com. Hit the PayPal button. We promise to use your money irresponsibly at strip clubs and
pizza.
Liquor stores and pizza. Yeah, the Christian community in both sides and all political spectrums says, well, the government should take care of it. That's just not how it's supposed to work. We're supposed to take care of each other. I think I'm not a collectivist. I don't think that there should be mandatory anything, but I do have a strong sense that we're all in this together, that we are a social creature. We're a social animal that desperately needs connection with other human beings and help from other people, and we are designed to help each other in communities. And we, by giving over that responsibility to take care of our fellow man, we absolve ourselves of one of our purposes on this planet. And it makes no sense to me. And so when you look at something like the Syrian refugees, there hasn't been a moral crisis. There's been animosity towards them. You know, instead of looking at
it is get out.
Yeah, or look at Hispanics in this country. Instead of befriending, there's a group here on the South Side called the Chin. Mm-hmm. Indianapolis, and really right by me,
yep.
I live in a district filled with more people from Burma, culturally they're called the Chin. Outside of Burma, this is the largest community near me. So if I go to the marsh over here, it is nothing but, I'm not sure what.
Marsh is a grocery store for those of you not in Indiana.
Thank you. If you go 5 minutes west here, you are in Little Burma, and the people are lovely and friendly, and they get off of the airplanes and are granted refugee status, and they are put into a culture that they do not understand.
They're seeking political asylum.
Right, and so they get here with the clothes on their backs because they've escaped from Christian persecution, so they're all Christian people that are being persecuted and killed by Buddhists. That's weird. And they get here, and they step off the boat, and they come from not necessarily huts, but very poor dirt villages.
Does the boat come up the White River, or how do they get to Indianapolis?
Right out here on my lake, on my retention pond. And
donated parachutes.
Imagine the cultural shock of you being flown into Burma and dropped off into a village where there is no electricity. There is no... You know, you're fearing for your life. They get here, and so people will go. I'll stand in the grocery store. I'll be waiting in line, and people will have like coupons, and not know how they work, or they'll go to Bed Bath and Beyond here locally because they'll get the Bed Bath and Beyond coupons, and they'll say, "Can I get my free pillow now?" And they don't know how it works. The Fresh Idea Card. They don't know how it works, and so, you know, it's always a great opportunity for me to say like to help them out, or kind of like help the dumb cashier who's like 16 and just. Oh, these people just don't know what they're talking. They don't speak English. You know, like intervening. There's all the churches on the south side here have ingratiated themselves to the Chin community to help them transition into American culture.
And that's my point. Role. That is my entire point.
Right.
Is I don't see that. I don't see it even in Canada. Because, like, if you read the story of the little Syrian boy that washed up on the Turkish shore, his dad. His dad, his mom, and I think it was either two brothers or his siblings were on a raft crossing the Mediterranean, and the reason that boy drowned was because the raft started deflating while they were floating to shore. And that's amazing to think that's the state of things. And when they're arriving, they're being beaten in Turkey. No one wants them. No one will take them. They leave them, and they're basically it's like Occupy Wall Street, except in the bus stations and the train stations of Europe. And for instance, in Budapest, the government has decided they won't pay to bus them anywhere to get rid of them. They're making them walk to the next border. And it's amazing that I haven't heard a peep because they are Muslim. I feel that there hasn't been a peep from the Christian community that I have seen. And if the Christian community wants something done, they can go to the church or they can go to the state. No one organizes faster and gets things done quicker than the church system and network in the United States from politicians, because they can turn out and vote in the Republican Party and they can turn out and vote in the Democrat Catholic community. And yet you don't – I don't know. Maybe it's because it hasn't become mainstream yet, but it questioned me with the open borders, because if we had absolute open borders, I would be quick and let's say – 500,000 people came to shore in the United States into a libertarian, voluntarily associated community. I'd just be really interested to see how open border people were. Because it's one of those abstract, theoretical ideas that once put into practice, I always feel is going to fall and crumple.
It's important for individuals to be prepared, to deal. You know, if you're going to be charitable, you need to make sure that your own house is in order. Mm-hmm. So not only as a country, but as individuals. So, you know, if I've got a mortgage that I can't pay for, and I've got credit card debt and house debt, and, you know, I've got bills that are out that are crazy, and I can't function there, and I've not lived my life on a budget, and I haven't paid attention, then I can't go out and help, you know, with a refugee problem. I can't give to my church so that they can do the work on my behalf. It has to start at home. So the individuals, libertarians that are listening, that says, yeah, we ought to do this individually. You have to do the work on your own to get yourself in a place so that you are on the footing that you can deal with, you know, with actually doing the charitable giving that needs to be done in spite of government. You know, yeah, that you get taxed 30 or 40% and your money's supposed to be doing that on your behalf, but, you know, ignore that. Make sure your house is in order. Get yourself in a position where, you know, you may not be able to deal with this one today, but in 2 years, 4 years, 5 years, you can get to a point where you can actually start to affect change. And as an individual, I think that's, you know, that's what we need to walk away from with this. And that's the one thing you can control is yourself, so that you can direct funds to whatever organization that you think can help.
Yeah, I guess my more question is, though, the how open border is everyone until it's at your front door?
Right.
you know, especially in a voluntarily associated community, it's, well, we have these principles, and if you don't like them, you can leave.
Yeah. Well, we have an open border policy. We talk about open borders, but it's easy to do from North America when you have Canada to the north, who we've, you know, lived with for a while. And, you know, and then you've got oceans on both sides, and you've got Mexico. Mm-hmm. You know, the only real threat that our, you know, our American psyche has had has been Mexico for the last, you know, my entire life, maybe 50 years. I don't know how long we've truly had this boogeyman of Mexico to the south.
And Canada during the early 1800s. We shouldn't, you know.
Started with the drug war.
Yeah, that's probably true. Probably since the 70s, in reality.
Yeah.
You know, I guess we had a little problem with Canadians around 1812 or so, but we worked that out.
Which they celebrate to this day.
Fucking assholes. God save the queen.
Yeah. They celebrate that, you know, quote-unquote victory.
Right, but I guess, you know, it's easier for us to have the to have an open borders mindset here as individuals when you're not in Europe and the borders don't change every time that there's a sneeze of a problem and the Russians move and Georgia loses some territory or the Ukrainians or whatever else. You know, you look at the political map of Europe over the last 1,000 years and it's constantly changing. The United States, it doesn't change. So the open borders thing is a little easier to think about from our perspective where you let people in, but political borders over...
There's very few people coming in.
Exactly. You've got to really want to swim that Atlantic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And like, you know, like well, we deal with the... When, oh, yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, like, well, okay, well, states do get, like, immigration from different other states, like, but they don't start off as poor from that zero state. Just like Texas took in over 1 million people from California.
Absolutely. Granted, Katrina, you had tons of people that came from Louisiana into Texas.
But at least, you know, had American dollars already and knew how the American system worked. I know it's not a good example, but it's kind of close where... Because some of those, some people from Katrina did move out. They did go into other communities. Some of them did better after leaving Louisiana. Some went back. Some aren't doing so well. They're sitting in different, like in poverty, and depending on what area that they are in. But like, you are right. It's because I want to say like during Katrina, like because I'm kind of an open borders kind of person, and everyone was like, "Oh, they're all coming up here, and that's probably why some crime's gonna be like." Because it's a very easy, lazy way of thinking to blame it on the new guy.
Because it's how you can get the Republican nomination for president and lead all the polls.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I mean, isn't that scary? I mean, you know, I don't know. I guess I hate to be the guy that sits. You know, sometime we ought to do a show on whether there is merit to cultural preservation. Because I think that that's a discussion that's always avoided because it's xenophobic.
Yeah.
And it depends on what your culture is based in, right? So if your culture is libertarian, is a, you know, a promotion of libertarian values, then I think there is...
You're afraid of getting overrun to the point where your message no longer gets...
Right, out. Because theoretical voluntary in, you know, voluntary community, if there is no... no backstop to infringements, and then it's just mob rule. If there isn't a, this is what we believe, you know, and then as over time with assimilation and new entrants, then there isn't a existing set of libertarian philosophies that you're able to point to and say, well, this is how we work here. Like, well, no, that's how it used to be, but that's no longer the case because we have new people and new culture and new norms.
Sorry, Mr. Voluntarist, we have taxes now.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the problem is that it's like we've talked about over the last few episodes, openness versus closeness. And in my opinion, anytime an individual and then, you know, a society is made up of individuals, anytime a society or individuals are closed and protective instead of open and accepting and loving, it just spells it's a recipe for disaster, and it leads to bad thinking, and it just leads to a society that nobody really wants to live in, but everybody lives in it because of their bad thinking. It's cognitive errors. I mean, to think that somebody is less of a person because they are from a different country or because they have different cultural values. It's just stop it. It's just so stupid. It's just it's
is it
so
though, if
irrational.
They come in and they for instance, the United States is a country that's foundationally based on the individual, or was in time. What if they're from a more communal area and where there's an absence of focus on the individual? It's like a Japanese version where we work towards the collective pride. Is it bad from a libertarian perspective to be closed? unless we say you're going to assimilate to our norms, you're going to assimilate to what we believe, here's why we believe it, and if you don't like it, you can leave or go back to Japan.
But well, go ahead.
Harry. I was going to say, like, but in, like, in a voluntary society, like, if someone comes in, wants to come, is like, well, we want to do this communal thing and do like that. That's fine. The voluntary society is like, yes, you can do that in your little circle inside our, but in our bigger circle, you can be your communal self. That's like, you just got to allow our voluntary self to go through.
Does that happen a lot?
What? Go through?
The mob comes through against the minority and says, well, we'll coexist.
Well, kind of happens. How about Israel, like, and Palestine? At Porkfest, you get people to have, like, they have, like, the orgy dome in this one area where people want to be naked and do all these stuff. Like, but that's in a little small
at a festival
section
of anarchists. Right, you, there, you're shocked anarchists. That
you have my attention.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't heard from Dear Leader in a while, but you talk about the anarchy swinger zone.
Free the nipple.
Yeah.
Then you have where I was with all the different families up there. It was nice and quiet, and we all kind of sat up there in our own little area. But we were all at the one voluntary pork fest, but they all had small little different camps.
Right, but you were all of the same mindset. You were all libertarians or freedom oriented.
That is correct, yes.
Now, if all of a sudden a bunch of statists showed up at pork fest, you think that everybody would say, let's all get together and we'll just exist, you know, while you guys are over there making sure we're all licensed, that our food vendors are all licensed, but we'll coexist because we just want to be together, and they outnumbered you. You think that would go so well?
Well, the thing is, they changed the society over. They would basically, like, coup the voluntary society.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. That's the norm. In that voluntarily, like a communal organization, whenever a majority that believes differently comes in, they collectivize and then become the force. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know that it's a bad thing to say you're going to believe this because this is what we believe, or you get out.
Well, that's why
it's
why
a liberty-oriented message.
A reasonable number of people that are always coming in the country at a rate that they're going to assimilate with the understandings of what the American civilization is. But we've had, for so long, we've had such a tiny little conduit of people coming in that you get a demand to come across the country or come across the border into the United States. And, you know, there's folks that are doing day labor and everything else. And on one hand, you've got businesses that depend upon those folks and people that want the services. So you've got 10 to 20 million people in the last 10 years or so, depending upon our level of our economy as to how many have actually been here. I don't think we would have to have those 20 million people here illegally if we had a reasonable rate of immigration. And if we were not only looking for people that were coming from Asia and, you know, more highly skilled areas, we need to make sure that we balance that and we bring people in through, from Latin America as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I'll be the exclusionist a-hole where nobody wants to live with my freedom.
You just want the Catholics to breed enough to keep up with everybody
yes.
else.
It's all about maintaining the birth rate.
I just think that we should be open to new people because new people come in and make you better, and we can get them all healing crystals if they're broken.
We really like the foods. We like the German food. We like the Mexican food. We just want new people's food.
It's a position of... I just now realized, like, the kindness of that of Greg's position, because in a voluntary society, right, being overtaken like that, they would probably try to protect that violently if need be.
Sure.
So, like, it's almost like you're doing that just to stop a war.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They want to be peaceful, but if someone is trying to, because they are being taken, they're being taken over, but not by violence. But
I will protect my homestead, but the second that you are no longer in the majority, mm-hmm. it's a lot more difficult.
Yes.
And so then you're actually promoting liberty by being exclusionary.
Yeah.
You're protecting liberty for those that you are already here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, you nerds. We got to finish this.
Are we still on?
Yeah.
I bet you right now, I know, if we have a single listener in Dearborn right now, this is hitting home.
I was about to do something racist. I'll stop. Okay, let's see.
So are you recording, though?
I did not record a single second of this. Okay, kids. Final thoughts for the episode. Jeremiah, go.
I want to thank you all for letting me visit the big city of Indianapolis. I come from Henry County, Indiana. We've got
over to the McDonald's.
We're going to go to the McDonald's and maybe get us a sausage McMuffin or something.
What? What? What?
Where's Henry County?
Somewhere where you should not go.
Go to the Ohio border and walk left.
Yeah. It's about Henry County is about halfway between Indianapolis and in Dayton on I-70. Oh.
Don't let the sun see your ass.
We're a very welcoming group to all kinds of individuals. We've got one of the largest for-profit prisons in the state.
It's Newcastle.
Very proud of it.
Castle because they keep the different out.
So anyway, it's been a really interesting discussion today. I do want to drive the point home of, I think, you know, the one action that people that can actually take is to start taking care of things at home and paying attention to what you're doing so that, you know, we talk about this voluntarist stuff all the time and great on paper, but if you are not in a position to actually take care of yourself, then you can't take care of others. So really something to start thinking about is how are you doing yourself, and take the steps so that you're ready to actually help others when it's needed, especially when you see the economy, you know, hitting a bumpy road here and there. You want to make sure that you're
we
in
call
good
it
shape.
The China flu.
Yeah.
Keep them out. Keep them out. They spread economic disease in America, and according to Scott Walker, we should cancel all trips.
Oh boy.
Yep.
It's a funny the things you have to do to win the Republican Why, nomination right? nowadays.
It's cheaper now. You schedule trips.
All right.
It's more fiscal responsible to schedule the trip on the downswing.
Exactly.
It's more physically responsible. Harry, final thoughts?
One thing I want to say, like, hope I'm not going to step on anyone's toes with this one, is I just want Christians to understand that try to act more Christ-like. Put your book down. Just act like Christ, please. Put your book down. And just act like Christ.
Put your book down.
Put your book down. Act like Christ.
I'll go to that party because he'll be turning everybody's water into wine. It'll be free.
You're supposed to read. The problem is that Christians don't pick up the book and they don't read the book.
No. Put the book down.
No, you pick the book up.
Put the book down.
Pick the book up.
Put the book down.
You're
and
an
love
atheist.
Some
what do you know? Pick I'm the book up and start reading.
Put the book down. Start loving people. So love your neighbor. Love everybody
you.
Else. Love everyone you get your hands
onto.
Put
this book down on your head.
Help people out. Stop turning Christianity into a death cult. It's a lot of Christians like to concentrate on death. When they do that, they also turn people off to your message. What? It does. It does.
These are final thoughts. We don't have time to rebut.
That's true.
You don't have time. Yeah. Yeah. That's why I've saved it for now. What? No. Christianity. Come.
Listen, I'm not going to take the advice of somebody who thinks that Terry Labonte is the greatest race car driver in history. Too.
He is.
He's the greatest Labonte. Bobby was the second greatest, and then maybe
Dale. Dale Labonte.
No, not Dale.
Roger.
There was saying name.
No,
Roger
there was
Labonte.
Justin Labonte. Justin was Terry's kid.
I liked.
He did very well in the European series.
He won a nationwide race or a Busch Series race back in the day. And
Hunter Labonte.
Oh, and also, like, another thing I want to tell people is use VPNs and please back up your data on an external phone. back it up. You should have three different backups. You have one in your house. You should have and back up another one sitting at your parents' house. Go see your parents and leave your backup hard drive there, please.
What if you don't have parents, Harry? So
I don't listen to bastards anymore. Oh, sorry.
I don't listen to bastards. I don't know why that be. Oh, Greg. Yeah, I saw that.
What was that?
Reggie Wayne got released by the Patriots.
Breaking news in sports. Reggie Wayne is just released.
Wow.
Refused to give up trade secrets.
Yeah.
I think the reason I'm was particularly taken with the refugee crisis is because we caused it. It's because we destabilized Iraq by removing Saddam Hussein. We did.
This is our fault again.
I mean, who else removed him?
I agree.
Then we spent a ton of money on the Iraqi army, and guess what? They quit. And so then the people who took that over were ISIS. So now they're well-financed. They have control of oil fields and able to basically sell $30 per barrel crude oil and finance themselves with $3.6 billion a year. On top of that, after overthrowing Gaddafi in Libya by providing weapons out of the CIA, the embassy, and Hillary Clinton did nothing, you know, destabilized that area.
It was a gun-free zone.
Then we've decided to help Jabhat the al-Nusra Front, who are the moderate al-Qaeda affiliate, take out Bashar al-Assad and allow ISIS to grow into Syria and have control over a major area and of momentum where they have implemented Sharia law and crucify people, behead people, and do it, put people in cages, push them into the water to drown, and do it on video. Now you have 500,000 this year, or 438 through July, and you had 500,000 this year. And all of a sudden, though, these EU countries that were our coalition, our joint coalition, we can't be responsible for this. Why are they coming here? Why on earth are they fleeing? Well, you probably would too, considering the Islamic State's economy is crushing license fees and unemployment, and only aid and economy that really exists is what the state allots to you. And Bashar al-Assad was using sarin gas on his own people. That's the guy who's secular. Yeah. And then there really isn't a government in northern Iraq in certain areas, and so instead, or Syria, so you have ISIS light and Jabhat al-Nusra. And all this is going on, and granted, it's always been a mess over there, but we really welcomed in hell for, at this point, nearly a million political refugees, and yet no one wants to take them in because, well, we can't have them here, you know. And you know who's the worst? None of the Arab states have offered them any asylum whatsoever. Not a single Arab state as well.
Because the last thing any of those states want is more population that will destabilize their power.
Exactly.
Because a refugee population that is desperately needy will just suck up whatever they're trying to bribe their populations with to keep them from overthrowing their government and allowing ISIS in.
Yep.
I mean, so I kind of understand their strategy in not helping their own.
Well, I get the incentives, but I'm saying look at the human cost. Fake weapons of mass destruction has, to a point where 3-year-old Syrian kids who were perfectly fine, were trying to get it, you know, immigrate to Canada with their father, are washing up on a Turkish southern shore. And yet everyone's saying, well, what the hell's going on over there? What the hell's going on is there were imaginary weapons, and we decided to liberate them. And now we're dealing with the cost, and the costs are... This is how Holocausts start, is the problem, because it's the new people. Someone finally takes them in. The economy doesn't do as well. They need a scapegoat. A nationalist, nostalgic leader rises and says, "This is the reason we are screwed. We need to send them to camp, or we need someone. They need to be someone else's problem." And you see it in France. You see highly evolved, highly educated individuals talking about we need to get rid of those darn brown people. I mean, that is, if you think racism is only for the ignorant, go read about the Browning of France. PhDs, scholars, highly cited academics, all talking about how we're in a world where maybe we should get them out and preserve the culture. And so we created, I'm sorry I kind of went off a tangent, but we created all this devastation. And so, you know what, damn it, we're a little bit responsible.
All right. We're responsible for everything because we are nosy, busybody. Because
we're everywhere.
Fuck ups. Gosh.
If Ron Paul had just won, this had never happened.
You, listen, it's happening, and you could have prevented it.
You did nothing.
You did nothing. And now you must, you must feel the wrath of the happening.
Yep.
I miss Ron Paul, man. I miss the good old days. Rand Paul's a disappointment to me. He's a disappointing person. And I want daddy back.
I'll tell you what, he did really well. Tucker Carlson filled in for Hannity 2 nights ago, and Rand, he demolished Trump, but he can't get it on television screens to see that he's the only one standing up to him, and Jeb just looks like a doofus.
I wonder if he can kind of make 2020 his time to shine, but we'll see.
Two polls came out today that have him polling 0% nationally.
Yeah. Rand. Okay. It's bad. He's not going to make the next debate stage.
It's looking and more and more like
that. He
needs
to drop out.
Yeah.
It's getting to where it's over.
Well, a lot of the people that, you know, helped get his dad to, like, the helps get his message out there, goes to that network.
They won't touch him.
They don't want nothing to do with it.
Because what have we said from the beginning of the prospect of this? You can't piss off the people that made Ron Paul what Ron Paul was by trying to toe the line. You know, every Ron Paul maniac that I talk to
because he was pure.
It's just like, I just don't trust Rand. There's something about him that is shifty. There's just, I don't know. He's just not his dad. And it's not because he's not his dad that he didn't get that support. It's just he kind of lost it. You know, and you can argue the Creighton point of political expediency all you want, but your ground game and your money is going to come from the Ron Paul people, and you just pissed in their face for 2 years, and mm-hmm. now you can't figure out, you know.
Give me your money, and I'm going right. to shove you in a closet
well, if
and
I hire,
wait till the,
well,
I get the nomination.
If I hire Jesse Benton, then all those people will come back. It's like, that's the opposite of what you ought to do.
Mm-hmm.
So... Yeah. All right, kids, we got to wrap up. I don't have anything. Thank you to the people that donated to us. Thank you to the people that listen. Thank you to the people that share. Thank you for the people that care enough to write us and say, "Where's my episode?" And that's what you all sound like in my head. We love you very dearly. We appreciate you listening this far into the episode, and we also apologize. So, as always, we promise to
do better
next time. Oh, see? Messed it up.
He's off his game. He doesn't even know the end.
I'm halfway through my date.